Yeah,
at your feet, O Marpa, from Lodrak I bow down. Grant your blessing that this beggar will stay in natural retreats, that your stalwart benefactors are so fondly gathered here, makes a right connection for fulfilling the two concerns. When this body hard to get at so easily decays, gets the nourishment it needs, it will flourish and be full of health. When the pollen from the flowers growing in the solid ground, and the honeydew of raindrops falling from the deep blue sky come together, their connection is a benefit to beings. But what gives this link its meaning is when Dharma is included too. When a body that's illusioned by its parents nursed to life, and the guiding instructions from a Lama who's reliable come together, their connection brings a practice of Dharma to life. But what gives this link its meaning is when persevering hard bone beats, when a cave in the rock in a valley with no human being, and someone really practicing without hypocrisy come together, this connection can fulfill your every need. But what gives this link its meaning is what's known as the emptiness. When a Milarepa's practice of endurance in meditation, and those from the three realms who have the quality of faith come together, this connection brings about the good of beings. But what gives this link its meaning is compassion in a noble heart. When a skillful meditator meditating in the wilderness, and a skillful benefactor providing the wherewithal come together, this connection leads to both gaining Buddhahood. But what gives this link its meaning is to dedicate the merit. When an excellent Lama endowed with compassionate heart, and an excellent student with endurance in meditation come together, this connection makes a teaching accessible. But what gives this link its meaning is the samaya it brings about. When the gift of Abhisheka with its blessing that works so fast, and the fervent trusting prayer where you're praying it will come to you, Come together, this connection, get your prayer well answered soon. But to give this link its meaning, a little bit of luck might help. Oh, Master Vajradhara, the essence of Akshobhya, you know my joys and sorrows and what this beggar's going through.
Tan Kalam Gombo Ludrupje Zepe Tupa Dogwando Tupa Dogwa, let's take Kaltiwa Kahiju.
This afternoon, I will be explaining a few important verses from the text by Nagarjuna that is. Often known as, in Tibetan it's called Dzogpa Dokpa. The title is often translated as Refutation of Criticism. It occurred to me and a friend that we could translate it as Turning the Argument Back on Itself. It's almost very close to what the Tibetan actually says.
Listen.
The first four lines of the text say, dependently arisen things are called emptiness. For that which is dependently arisen is that which has no inherent nature. If we took the meaning that's presented in these four lines and turned it into a syllogistic form, the syllogism would say, the subjects, things, let's see, there. In regard to the subjects, things that arise dependently, there is a reason for calling them emptiness, because whatever arises as the assembly of mere dependently related causes and conditions has no inherent nature. Also?
Korwa chuchin rangin je madrupa yinte tender nang sa yin bise penalo ni je
or to make the same point in rearranging the parts of it, we could say the subject samsara does not exist inherently because of being mere interdependent relationship. For an example, consider movies.
Lenyo donga som chuchin rangin meba yinte tender nang sa yinbise pen namalangi.
Or, applying this to another subject, we would say the subject, the three types of suffering, which are dependent arisings, interdependently related arisings, do not exist inherently. Jumsin karadik. Rangshin ki med.
Tendril
nang sam yinbe chir. Because of being mere dependently related appearances, for example, it is like dreams.
Dunga chujin mowut rangin je mete jujin tender sokwa nang sa yin bise pena mlan je dunga ye.
Or the subject, pain, does not inherently exist because of being the mere assembly of dependently related causes and conditions. For example, the pain in dreams.
Namdo na zo kwa chujin, te zon so namdo na zo chujin, rang yin ji mi te, chujin ten de nang sam yin bese. Pen nam malam je namdo yin. Namdo che wa me par.
Or, the subject, thoughts, such as doubt, do not inherently exist because of being mere dependently related appearances that come about through causes and conditions. For example, thoughts in a dream. Rinpoche commented after that, thoughts are unborn. Or, the subject, the difficulty and hardship that one experiences in this lifetime does not inherently exist because of being merely the appearance of dependently related phenomena that come about through causes and conditions. For example, movies, the images that appear in movies.
Yang dapat madrupa kan ye, tender nang zang yin bi se.
Or, the varieties of pleasure and pain, or comfort and misery, are equal in their abiding nature. Because, first of all, they do not genuinely exist, and secondly, they are mere appearances that are dependently related phenomena that arise through causes and conditions. The subject, the reasoning of interdependent relationship, is a reasoning that can establish the non-inherent existence of
Dongyan Lansopa Tene Yandaba Madruba Denze Yinde,
Rebe. Donga Tende Donga Rangyinja Madruba Druba Denze Yanda Yinde, Sursumba Jinjite.
Lhasa is a reason that can demonstrate the non-inherent existence or the lack of inherent existence in suffering and so forth because of being a reasoning that possesses the three modes. Also?
Karma Pachuja Jamsa Lat Sosum Tandem, whatever.
Sosumba change it in it.
Sosumba change it in it.
Then Jango Saja painted the soak you drop in Derwang Nisombare. Soak you drop in Derwang Ebataya Dagan Sinji Diabar.
Soak you
drop in Derwang Eba. Soak you drop in Derwang Nitin Sinji Jimmy Isom.
Soak you drop in Kari, Javane.
Derba Nipa.
Dalwa Nipa.
Yes, and Rodo and Derba Nipa. Soku drops a taxor tambo dropper.
Loss of Hagas.
Derba Nipa, Yichap, and Dokyam Nipa.
Loss of
Dixon.
Jiggy do it, much?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
So the reason given in the previous syllogism speaks of the three modes of a correct sign. And just to repeat, it said a reason that possesses the three modes. That's the definition of a correct sign that is given by the seventh Karmapa, Chodrak Jamso, in his great work on the topic of logic and perception, and also by the very learned Gajupa scholar whose name was Pema Karpo. And variations on this are given by other learned people. Thus, for instance, the Geluk scholars say that which is the three modes is the definition of a correct sign, and Ju Mipham Rinpoche says that in which the three modes are complete is the definition of a correct sign. And the great Sagya scholar, Sagya Pandita, puts it somewhat differently, saying that in which the presence of the subject in the reason is established, N, for which the relationships of forward and counter privation are established, definitely, is the definition of a correct sign. Also?
Chuchin soji chusu trupa cha ni sokchu re, sokchu trupa.
Kaptila tenzik kare re?
Tenzik tender.
Tender, yinbe chiyo re?
Tender ji tenzik yinbe e se.
Alasa.
Tender ji tenzik chuchin dunga ji, chuchin so dunga ji chusu trupa cha ni sokchu trupa.
Alasa. Dunga,
tender,
taa kanang tezu, go thong song gongda. Dungya wa chio jing rang shing ki mei di dendru yinba chio
jing. Dendru yinba se hi kubi tse.
Los.
Dendru te ni.
Los.
Dunga ji chu su. Chu jing dunga ji chu su trupa cha ni. Sok chu trup.
Los.
Dupzi ten zik te ni. Tun so. Rang yin mei ba la trupa am cha pa cha ni ji chap trup. Dendru te ni. Mantun so. Rang yin ji trupa yi na. Tender ji tenzik te mepe chapare. Mepe chape, tele dope chane, dope chapter pare.
Nasa.
This ena, chorsumba change tenzik.
Nasa. How is it that the three modes of a correct sign are complete in this syllogism? The syllogism says the subject, suffering, does not exist inherently because of being mere dependent relationship. So in that case, suffering is the subject. Its not existing inherently is the thesis that is to be proved, and its being mere interdependent relationship is the reason given for that. Those are the three parts of a syllogism. If the reason is a correct reason, if it is a correct sign, then three different aspects or modes must be complete in it. The first of these is called the presence of the reason in the subject. Because suffering is indeed dependent relationship or dependent arising. Because it is the case that wherever one finds suffering,
one finds that it is always dependently related or dependently arisen phenomena, we can say that the reason is present in the subject, and the first mode of a correct sign is complete. The second mode of a correct sign is called forward pervasion, and it means that the reason pervades the concordant class of the thesis that is to be demonstrated, which is to say, in this case, excuse me?
Could you repeat that?
Well, maybe I should finish it and then repeat it.
Yeah.
Yes or no? Let me go through it once and then I'll come back through it again. Because dependent relationship pervades whatever does not exist inherently, the first mode of the sign is complete. Let me put this in. The form of this is far more complicated than the content. I'm going to give you a very simple way to work with the form of it. If you call the three parts of a syllogism A, B, and C,
A, B, C.
Then, if A is C, then the first mode of the sign is complete. If whatever is C is also B, then the second mode of the sign is complete. And if whatever is not B is not C, then the third mode of the sign is complete. I'm sorry, what did somebody say? Again, did somebody say?
Yeah.
If A is C, then the first mode of the sign is complete. If whatever is C is necessarily B, then the second mode of the sign is complete. And if whatever is not B is necessarily not C, then the third mode of the sign is complete. So let's connect it up to this syllogism, which says the subject, suffering, that's A, does not inherently exist. Not inherently exist is B, because of being dependent relationship or mere dependent arising, that's C. Because suffering is mere dependent relationship, because all suffering, any phenomena that are classed within suffering are mere dependent arisings, mere dependently related phenomena, then you can say A is C. That's true. That's the first mode of the sign. Second is, if whatever is dependently related or dependently arisen does not inherently exist, then the second mode of the sign is complete. That is to say, whatever is C, dependently related, is necessarily B, not inherently existent. The third mode of the sign says, whatever is not B is not C. If whatever is not inherently existent, is also not dependently arisen, then the third mode of the sign is complete. Okay? Let's go on. Consider the suffering in a dream. Suppose you dream that you are being burned by fire. And in that dream, fire has the aspect of being hot and burning. And you have the experience in the dream experience, that you are being burned by it. Everything that appears in that dream is merely a collection or an assembly of dependently related causes and conditions. And because it is merely an assembly of dependently related causes and conditions, it does not exist by way of its own nature. That is to say, it does not exist inherently. And there is an internal hierarchy or logic to that, which is that because the assembly of causes and conditions, the collection of causes and conditions, itself does not inherently exist, then whatever arises in dependence upon that collection of causes and conditions also does not inherently exist.
Tela dembar khena jume chiva yenda cheke te rangin je madroba. Juma yimba sena rangin je madroba ten to gore. Da oma pe gaza goksor te chu tam je tongba yin yang trupe trupa ngokpa tang jume juma ngokpa te chekwa re son gore. Juma da trupa te rangin yin yang cheke chekla ngokpa tang gakwa se gore. Jume chiva Turba da Juma Rangin Jimina Yang, Chicky Ching Gopa cigarette.
Nossum.
Rama?
Larina.
That type of cigarette.
Nossum.
Tender words.
Nossum.
Take some.
Jiggy Dimish.
Yeah.
The second set of verses being taught here says, one magical creation halts another. One illusory being puts an end to the wrong views of his illusory opponent. When I refute the arguments of others, that is exactly what is happening. This verse is being taught in reply to the objections or criticisms of those who say that things truly exist. Those who say that things truly exist, having heard the teacher who teaches emptiness say, things do not truly exist, they are just illusions, they are just magical appearances. Having heard the teacher say that, will then say, your arguments are, like all the things of which you speak, mere illusions, mere magical creations, and they have no ability or force to refute things. Both the words that you state, and in fact you, the teacher, are just more magical creations, just more illusions. And like everything else, are empty, and so have no ability to overcome things. In reply to that, Nagarjuna has said, what we're dealing with here is a combat between magical creations and a combat between illusions. If one thing truly existed and the other were merely an illusion, then indeed, as you say, it would not be possible for that magical illusion to overcome that truly existent thing. But because those things that you regard as truly existent are in fact merely illusory things, they can indeed be overcome by arguments made out of words that are themselves illusions, spoken by a teacher, who is also just an illusion. For instance, if a Buddha or a Bodhisattva were to send an emanation or a magical creation, and others were to see this and think that it were truly existent, another illusion, another magical creation, could appear and overcome the first and show that in fact the first was not truly existent. It was merely an illusion. And similarly, if one illusory being were to appear and some were to think that this illusory being was real and true, then others could appear and show that in fact the first one never was true. It was only an illusion from the beginning. And thus, in the tradition of the Middle Way, the entire manner of refuting that which is to be refuted, of overcoming that which is to be overcome, is for one illusion to overcome another illusion. Another illustration of the same point is given in the next verse. It says, another example. Suppose a man thinks an illusory woman is a real woman. Then another illusion comes along and shows the man that he has made a mistake. That's my work. So this verse speaks about an illusory woman, and the gender issue here is just a matter of who you're talking to. If you're talking to men, then you end up talking about real women and illusory women. And if you're talking to women, then you talk about real men and illusory men. So that's just a way of explaining it. And here what's being said is that an illusory or emanated woman is mistaken for a real, truly existent woman. You could just substitute man for that. And someone then considers this illusory woman to be true and real, to have real and true existence. And in that way has come to take hold of this whole matter in the wrong way, has conceived it in the wrong way, is apprehending it in the wrong way, is mistaken and confused. And as a remedy to that, another illusion appears and demonstrates that the first is merely an illusion, and that in fact, the Tamelba, Tamde, Karisonsa.
Ransimba.
Tamelba Ransimba.
The Chipa, the Premier, Moma Mare, Ransimba, Mare Turbare.
No, sir. And demonstrates that all ordinary beings, that all these ordinary things are not established by way of their own defining character, are not genuine, actual things. Rather, they are mere emanations, mere magical creations. Nasa?
Tangombu Lodobje Riktoga Kapso Sarurpata Namba Sanjeba Tumta Omanamje Kanke Lemba Tela Gakpa Japare.
Hello, sir.
Chiran Kanke Lemba Tela Gakpa Japate in the Chiran Layan Tini Chung Yapar Joro Sena Tilene. Cutting it, I'm Changayo, Tina Nala Chung Deo. Nala Tamja may be Nangan Jimmy Conai. Karse ngala yino ke sirurpa ta namba sanje pe kheli ta mekpa la gaza jo ne ranlo la tamja ke tamja ngaye yo na tamja yo pa tamja ta kheli yo pa ti se na ngala chung te rang la yang jo kare
aso
kheli chin la jo pe repenoji te yo re yino ya ngala tamja me be na Yinji Kailin la Rikpinozi Temba Tsangre Mato Ranlok la Kailin Meba Tisena Nala Jumi Konai Nala Yin Kailin Jin la Jube Junte Meba Konai Jumsin Kare Nala Kailin Yamare
No sir
Take some
Lore Nagarjuna wrote a number of texts that analyze the nature of things with very careful reasoning, and these texts are called the collections of reasonings. And in these various texts, he takes issue with the positions and assertions that are held and made by non-Buddhists and Buddhists. And when he takes issue with Buddhists, of course, he is taking issue with those who hold to the tenets of the lesser schools. He finds fault with their positions and their reasonings. And then someone says to him, well, in just the way that you have shown that whatever position we take, there's some problem. That no matter what assertion we make, there's some flaw. So in the same way, you yourself must have flaws. Because you yourself must be holding some position, and whatever it is, there must be something wrong with it. So in reply to that, Nagarjuna says in the next verse, if I took a position, then I would have a flaw. Since I take no position, I have no flaw at all. Which is to say, when he is refuting the views of others, both non-Buddhists and Buddhists, he finds some problem with every position that they assume, because their positions always assume the inherent existence of things. And Nagarjuna concedes their argument, saying, if indeed I took some position, then I too would have some flaw. There would be some problem there. In fact, there would always be some way for reasoning to do harm to or to damage any position that I would take up. But in fact, I am not taking any position. And because I'm not taking any position, because I'm not holding any thesis, I'm not guilty of any flaw. Why not? Precisely because I'm not taking any position. The positions that others take, the views that they state and hold and defend, whatever those assertions may be, are mere appearances, mere assemblages of ideas and words and so forth. And because they are mere appearances, which are mere collections, then they are not truly existent. They do not genuinely exist. And in just the way that those positions do not exist, are not truly established, in the same way, the reasons that are stated in reply to those positions that find fault with them, do damage to them, do harm to them, and so on, are mere appearances, which are collections of dependently related, causally conditioned phenomena. Because that to which they reply, or that to which they speak, is itself not truly existent, so they themselves are not truly existent. And here, this points to one from among the 10 equalities. And the equality to which it points is the equality of all dharmas in being unborn. Just as all dharmas are unborn, so those which are to be refuted or negated, and those which are to refute or negate them, are also unborn.
Awesome. Gakpa sepa yore, ten rawo te, tene gaza tan gozi nika, tenre nang zan re, yang takpar nika mato pare. Te kintong gombo lutrup che yang, gaza tan chu tamche tungpa nyimba se na, nang zan re mato gaza tan gozi nika, nika rangi me pare.
Suppose one were to dream, and in that dream, some person were to state a position, or to say something that was false, or to say false words. And within that dream, some other person were to come along and demonstrate the falsity of the words that the first one had spoken. Someone else were to come along and dispel that wrong view, overcome, refute, or negate that wrong view that the first dream person had stated. After all, it's just a dream. And the false words that had been stated by the first person and the true words stated by the second person are both the words of dream persons, are mere appearances, and are not truly established, do not really exist. In the same way, then, the protector Nagarjuna is demonstrating that all phenomena whatsoever are mere appearances, just like those dream appearances, and that all of the interaction between objects and agents is, what do you say, all of that interaction lacks inherent existence, lacks any nature of its own.
Awesome.
What's being said here is that even though ultimately there is no refutation of one position and establishment of another, even though in the genuine nature of things there is no refutation of one and establishment of another, still, as mere appearances, there is refutation and establishment. In the final nature of things, there is no refutation and establishment, setting up one thing, knocking something over, because the final nature of things is beyond that, cannot be confined to that. However, in the world of conventional phenomena, the argument in favor of one thing and the argument opposed to something else are entirely feasible. No,
sir?
The next verse is the reply to someone who would say, you're wrong when you say that things are unborn and that things are empty, because that which is produced and that which produces it, the object and the agent, do exist inherently by way of their own nature. So, in reply, Nagarjuna says, if the son is produced by the father, but the father is also produced by that very son, then will you please tell me which one is the true cause and which the true result? No,
sir? This ပချေပါတယ်တင်ပါရပါတော်ရယ်ဟင်းနေရံရပေတာရင်ကျဲနော်တနေ့တင်းတော်မှာလေအဲဖမွန်းလေရပါပချေလေရပါတင်းတော်ဝင်တိကမှာလေဂျွန်စင်ကရင်စနာဖမချင်းနဖမှာလေဖမချေပါဖရင်နစင်ကံကဖရင်ပါချေဖရင်ပါတဲ့ဘလတုကဘုံတို့ပချေပါရံဖလတုကဘုံတို့ဖင်စင်ကြက်ကြက်လေညချဖင်စင်တုကဘုံစနာ
Yang da par madobare. The way we think about things conventionally is to think that, first of all, there's a father, and then later, father has a son, and so the father who existed before is the agent, and the son who comes after is the object of that activity. But if you look at this with reasoning, if you investigate this carefully, you see that it doesn't work very well to think about it that way. Because it does not make much sense to say that the father is a father before the son has been born. And so saying that somehow the father was there before, even though the son doesn't come along until later, doesn't make any sense. Because if it were the case that someone could be a father before the son is born, then everybody would be a father. So this whole relationship of father and son is a relationship of mutual dependence and doesn't work the way we think it does and does not truly exist. In this world, all things are unborn. So we could take this and for father and son substitute mother and daughter. It works the same way. When we say that father and son or mother and daughter are not truly established, we're not saying that they don't exist at all. We're saying that they are a dependent relationship. We're saying they don't exist ultimately. They don't exist in the face of a consciousness, of a intelligent consciousness that realizes the abiding nature of things. And thus, they are not truly established. However, they are mere appearances. What does it mean to talk about the mere appearance of things as interdependently related phenomena? Well, for instance, if three conditions are complete, those three being the moon in a cloudless sky, clear water down below, and someone whose eye faculty is working well, it doesn't have any of the flaws that are introduced by diseases and so forth, then there is the image of the moon in water. And when those three come together, even though in reality this doesn't exist, nevertheless, there is the mere appearance. The inseparability of appearance and emptiness. And when one understands this abiding nature of things, that is an astonishing marvel. In the same way, father and son, mother and daughter, are interdependently related do not exist in reality, do exist, do appear as mere appearances, are present as mere appearances. When this abiding nature is understood, it is an astonishing marvel. And experienced as astonishing marvel brings the sense of spaciousness, carefreeness. It's not like being locked up in a small box, bound up some way. There's a sense of carefree spaciousness. Also?
Kanla tongpa nyi seba tela tong nam tam che se. Kanla tong nyi ma seba tela che ha ma se to song te.
Honestly.
And di kap so, ngu ma ba nam che nyi tu nam che, tikpa chenpo pa la chu tam che tongpa nyi na, teni jeba ngap se ma se. Jeba ngap se yan tongpa nyi re ma se. Jeba ngap se me pe le jumde ma se. Le jumde me na, teni denpa ye yang me. Denpa ye me na, Dene den ye la tu gobe gendei me. Gendei me na chu yang me. Dene ko sanje yang me pate kanya ma se pa chong tang ware. Te chong te len re kan la tong pa nye se pa te la tong na tam che. Kan la tong nye ma se pa te la che yang ma se. Kan la tong pa nye se pa te la je wa nga se le jom de. Dene tanda. Jevanga se le jumde demba ye nam ya sadan lanje nam ya sanje nam jujin tende tong yin de nang zam de yebe se na kanga tamje sigre kanga tonye mase ba morong ba dendro bi na demba tro ba yin na jevanga se sigre mare jevanga ma demba tro sen de yang demba tro samaya dendro bi na jura me ba ji gogondo jura me ba dendro bi na jevanga ma देंडो ते खेक ते छें ते देंडो लंजोर तो कुमारे छें ते देंडो खेक ते समय देंडो ते छा तो कुमारे तीस है ना जेवांग आपसे मसे जेवांग आपसे मरों ने ले जमड़े था तो ने था कांगा मरों बच्चों ही रहे तो ने ये ना रंग रहे सुन पड़े
लास्ट
ते यहाँ या बो तो आ
ते या बो तो शुरू आते हैं मैंने तो ने खाया मैं मरों Those who believe in real things say to Nagarjuna, if things were really empty, as you say, then none of the rest of the Buddhist tradition could be feasible. That is to say, if things were truly empty, if things were empty of inherent existence, then former lifetimes would not exist, and later lifetimes would not exist. They couldn't happen. And if former and later lifetimes could not come about, then there would be no way for actions that are accumulated at one time, actions translates the Sanskrit word karma, then actions accumulated at one time could not serve as causes that bring about results as a later time. If it's not possible for causes to bring about results, then the four truths that are so central to the Buddhist teaching would be completely impossible. Then the Sangha that depends upon those four truths would be impossible. If the Sangha doesn't exist, the Dharma doesn't exist. If the Dharma doesn't exist, the Buddha doesn't exist. So those who believe in real things unleash this chain of reactions and say, if things were empty as you say they were, then nothing would be possible at all. Nagarjuna replies, turning the objection back on itself, turning the argument back on itself, that it's precisely the other way around. In this verse, for whom emptiness is possible, all objects are possible. For whom emptiness is not possible, and here I made a mistake trying to fix this, nothing, not everything, but if you'll correct that, please. Okay, there's four lines, all messy. For whom emptiness is possible, all objects are possible. For whom emptiness is not possible, nothing is possible. Nagarjuna says in reply, if things are empty of inherent existence, if things do not exist by way of their own nature, if things are mere interdependent relationships, then everything is possible. And for the person who understands that, then the presentation of everything else makes sense. Thus, if things lack inherent existence, then there can be former lifetimes, present lifetime, followed by lifetimes to come in the future. If there can be this series of previous lifetimes leading to lifetimes in the future, then actions accumulated in one lifetime can have consequences that are experienced in other lifetimes. If that's possible, then the four truths make sense. If the four truths make sense, then the presentation of the grounds or bhumis and paths of those who travel to liberation makes sense. If that makes sense, then there can be a Buddha. That is to say, so long as things are empty of inherent existence, there can be mere appearances. If, on the other hand, things were truly existent, were truly established, then it would not be possible for former lifetimes to yield to the present lifetime, and for the present lifetime to yield to future lifetimes. Because anything that is truly established is changeless. It is truly established. It really does exist. If it really does exist and doesn't depend upon anything else for its existence, then nothing can affect it. It cannot change. This lifetime could not end and be followed by some other lifetime. A previous lifetime that was truly existent could not disintegrate and give way to a present lifetime that is also truly existent. That change could not come about, and so there would be no sequence of lifetimes. There would be no sequence of cause and effect at all. But because all of these things lack inherent existence, because they are empty of any nature of their own, all of these things are feasible. Nasa?
Kanye Theta was sung by Sanjay de la Santalo. Then Sanjay la, you think Yenda Gonis Ha Mansarva, then Jung sung by you think you go Nis Ansarva.
Finally, I prostrate to the Buddha, who taught that dependent arising and emptiness as the middle path have the same meaning. Your words are supreme and incomparable. Here, Nagarjuna says that empty, dependent arising, and the middle path have the same meaning, have one meaning. And he prostrates to the Buddha who gave this teaching, saying, this statement of yours, these words of yours, are supreme and beyond compare. There is nothing to match them. Leaving all the other good qualities of the Buddha aside, and considering only the Buddha's good quality of having spoken dependent arising, he offers prostration to the Buddha. Lassa?
Dina, Natsu so nama tamje, nung yimbate, nung yindu ngotong batang, ngotong yindu Natsu nama te, nandong yin mebare.
Lassa? All of the various manifold appearances that are experienced, sensed, and perceived, while appearing, are empty, and while empty, appear. In that way, appearance and emptiness cannot be differentiated. This inseparable appearance and emptiness, this appearance emptiness that cannot be differentiated one from the other, is neither true nor false. It is beyond both true and false. Similarly, there is no existence that is an existence established by its very nature, and there is no non-existence that is an utter non-existence, a complete absence of anything whatsoever. Reality, all phenomena, all dharmas, are beyond existence and non-existence. They are beyond both the limit of existence and the limit of non-existence.
Anybody have the translation with them? The one I used? I'll just make one up otherwise.
What's being taught here in this text on turning the argument back on itself is similar to what Nagarjuna taught in another text known as the 60 Stanzas of Reasonings, where he said, those who realize that all things are dependently arisen, and just like a moon that appears in a pool of water, are neither true nor false, are not carried away, are not captivated by views. Also?
These are not any things you know, Tamji, Dengin and Deva, Imbassana, said the Nama, Tia, Chodakin, the Dengin and Deva. Dembayamare, Zumbayamare, Dengin.
Also? Thus, all phenomena that arise dependently are, just like the image of the moon in water, neither true nor false. They are beyond being either true or false.
Nasa?
So, So I've given you a brief explanation of some important verses from Nagarjuna's text, refutation of criticism, or turning the argument back on itself. Do you have these verses? So, let's recite them once. Dependently arisen things are called emptiness, for that which is dependently arisen is that which has no inherent nature. One magical creation halts another. One illusory being puts an end to the wrong views of his illusory opponent. When I refute the arguments of others, that is exactly what is happening. Another example, suppose a man thinks an illusory woman is a real woman. Then another illusion comes along and shows the man that he has made a mistake. That's my work. If I took a position, then I would have a flaw. Since I take no position, I have no flaw at all. If the son is produced by the father, but the father is also produced by that very son, then will you please tell me which one is the true cause and which the true result? For whom emptiness is possible, all objects are possible. For whom emptiness is possible, for nothing is possible. I prostrate to the Buddha, who taught that dependent arising and emptiness as the middle path have the same meaning. Your words are supreme and incomparable. We have 10 minutes. We could have 10 minutes of short questions. How do you do?
When to?
One, two.
Yeah. When to?
Please come forward and
Rinpoche, I have trouble with the very basis of all the arguments. I wonder if I can go back a step even before where you started. And I wonder if Nagarjuna is actually creating a position when he says if something is truly existent, it could not change. Why is it not possible for existent things to not change? And secondly, why do we take as our basic definition that something that is mutually dependent is non-existent? Why couldn't we say that things that are mutually dependent are existent and go from there?
I'd probably only do one of those at a time and keep it straight.
Sure.
But I've forgotten the first one now.
Okay, he says, if something is truly existent, it could not change. Yeah. As a basic definition, why can't we reverse that definition and say things that are existent can change?
Well, just make sure that you got the... I mean, I'll say this, but what he was saying was not existent, but truly existent. Okay? That's an important point.
Yeah, he's saying things are truly existent cannot change.
So that's the question I'm going to put to Rinpoche.
Why cannot things are truly
Why is it that if things are truly existent, they could not change?
No, why is it that they... Why can they not change?
That's what I...
Why are they... Can they not be changeable, truly existent things?
If something were truly existent, if something were truly established, then it would not depend upon causes and conditions. It would be
it would set itself up without relying upon anything other than itself. That's what it means for it to be truly existent. If something is truly existent and does not rely upon causes and conditions, and does, for that reason, not depend upon any causes and conditions, does not rely upon any causes and conditions, then it cannot be changed by causes and conditions. Ha ha.
Well, then the second question is, why? Why are we stuck with that definition? Why can't we say that things that are existent, the things that are mutually dependent can be existent? Why do we have to follow that definition of things? Why can't we say that things that are the result of causes and conditions are existent?
Mm-hmm. Ine yoba mares, yoba sejitere, ranshingi yoba mares, temba yoba mares, segerewa. Ine jujenji chen namji, tenzo, ine yoba mayimbe jimsin karres. Nganza, karse jujen le juma, tela tene yoba mala karse la metube jimsin karres.
Te yoba tela ranginji yoba, ranginji yoba, denbar yoba, ranginji yoba, mungovi yoba tang, Nang zang tu yobba nye re. Tene jujin ten zhe cho zang jie ten jiong ka nang wa te denbar yobba ma re, rang yin yobba ma re, ngo yobba ma re, te sene yang dabar yobba ma re. Nang zang tu yobba re. Ten zhe nang zang tu yobba re. Nang zang tu me na tene yang cheta chak re. En nye ga re.
Nang zang tu yobba te?
Nang zang tu yobba re. Nang zang tu me na tene cheta chak re.
Cheta chak?
Emaho.
Trying to get it all down here. Okay. One needs to make a distinction between two types of existence. First would be where existence means existence by way of its own nature. Or another way of translating the same phrase is inherent existence. And within that same class, that same group, true existence. And also, something's existing by way of its own entity. That would be one type. The other type is existence as mere appearance. The first doesn't work. Anything that arises, that is to say, the first, anything that arises dependently is not inherently existent, truly existent. Existent by way of its own entity. Existent, what do you say, genuinely existent, existent in reality. Those things are, however, mere appearances. If you went further than that and said they are not even mere appearances, then you would be saying there's nothing whatsoever. You would have fallen to a nihilistic extreme. Hey, Maho.
Tenjong chokpa nawande. Yanda tong de mi na yang.
Lasa?
Kunzo nang sam to ye ba.
Lasa?
Garwa me ba ngom sar chi e ma ho. Don tambar me ba tan nang san do yo ba mangar ba jan
So Rinpoche has put this into four lines of verse. This assembly of dependently arisen appearances though absent in genuine reality is present as mere conventional appearance. The absence of contradiction here is an astonishing marvel, ema ho, which is to say, there is no contradiction between absence ultimately and presence as mere appearance.
Aha. If I could just push a little bit further so I can understand this. In terms of the image of the moon reflecting water, depending on the water, the moon and the eye, could you not say that that exists inherently as an image in water? It doesn't exist as a moon, but it exists as what it is.
Mm-hmm. Chunangi dawai te gi zugnin yorwa te dawa ma yin la yin e dawa zugnin du ran shin ji yoba ma yin be jim sen kare des
dawa zugnin to e zugnin to ran yin de me be jim sen te zugnin te la che na ran yin de yo na yang na chik yin gon do yang na to ma yin gon do chik ma re cha che to ma se jure Tama mare cha che re re ne rang yin je ma do par chek da tama rang yin le de be sa
des
da be zung yin chu chi rang yin je me de chek da tama rang yin le de be sa ra ba
la re re me che
te ne chek le de ba tama le de ba te ne che cha
des The image of the moon in water is not inherently present or inherently existent because when analyzed, it is beyond being either one or many. If one looks to see whether or not it is truly one thing, it is not truly one thing because it has parts. And if one looks to see whether or not then it is many things, many true things, truly many things, then each of those multiple parts turns out to have many different parts and does not make it as truly existent things. So stating this in one syllogism, it said, the subject, the image of the moon in water, does not inherently exist or is not inherently present because of being beyond being either one or many. Then, of course, one would need to give some commentary and explanation on what it means to say that it is beyond being one and beyond being many and why that entails the consequence and so
forth.
It's like that.
Thank you.
Okay. Now, meditation.
Now we'll meditate a bit.
Gomchote chunyi trepa ta trarwa ngang la, chunyi yopa, meba, ngubo, ngumi la sope trepa tamche lindepe, yin la, lo yang zindang lindepa, ngubo rinzimba, ngumi dunzimba, yopa rinzimba, meba rinzimba, zindang ke mekpa tamche, nyewar kewa chorje kyoje.
No, sir. The way to meditate here is like this. Rest the mind in the reality, or dharmata, that is beyond all elaborations and all complexity, beyond existence and non-existence, presence and absence, things and non-things, beyond all of those, in the expanse of reality, in which such complexity and such elaborations are nowhere to be found. And the way of holding the mind is similarly free from any notions of presence and absence, existence and non-existence, things and non-things. The mind is held in a way in which all such complexity and all such elaborations are pacified.
Taza tazi lendeba, gomza gomzi lendeba, chuza chuzi lendeba, topza topzi lendeba te, kangur ngidon samu tang, drabasena, kangur ngidon samu chik tang na, deva ya puchakare.
Lassa. This way of meditating is beyond, is free from, is not confined to something that is looked at and something that looks at it, something that is meditated upon and something that meditates upon it, something that is to be analyzed and something that analyzes it, something that is to be achieved and something that achieves it. The mind is held in a way that is similar to the fashion described in Milarepa's song known as the profound definitive meaning sung on the Snowy Range.
Tanda ludang irwa.
Tangre.
So we should sing it once.
Tene charanga su ja chure.
Naso. Indes ngoda. Shidaya mo.
Until they're gone.
This way of working with conduct, it works quite well. When biased thinking has vanished into space, no phony facades, eight dharmas nor hopes and fears, a keeper and kept, refined until they're gone. This way of keeping samaya, it works quite well. When you finally discovered your mind is Dharmakaya, and you're really doing yourself and others good, a winner and one, refined until they're gone. This way of winning results, it works quite well.
So,